This is Carla Dedesi with Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. I know that you are all in the season, the Christmas season. It is December right now, but we still have to think about our children's education, because what is more important and what is more of a gift than a really good education? So I have here with me today Anthony Mahone, who is a teacher with Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School. And we also have with us Dave Rossi, who is the CEO of Esperanza Charter Schools, and they have a cyber school as well as the brick and mortar school. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing with us just some of our Pennsylvania school choice. I know that a lot of us dislike Common Core, or maybe we just want to be more hands-on and have more parental control with our children's education. And one of the great things about living in this country, I think, is that we have a lot of great options. So we have public schools, we have Christian and Catholic schools, we have private schools, like the Germantown Friends Schools or Penn Charter. But I want to talk about our Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School first. Okay, Anthony?
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
Tell me a little bit about Pennsylvania Leadership Charter Schools.
So what it is, we are an online public school with blended learning opportunities. So even though we are technically a charter, we are public school because we accept all Pennsylvania students in the whole state, and they are eligible to enroll at no cost. So most of our students are cyber school students, so they are completely at home completing their work by themselves. But we also have centers where the students can come in Monday to Friday and work. They're kind of like computer labs with supervision, so they can come in and work with peers and supervisors to get their work done if the parents want to drop them off there or if they have to work. We also have schools that in locally in Westchester for 2 days a week that students can come in and complete their education 2 days a week in person. These are mostly advanced placement classes or creative and performing arts classes that we offer. So it's really, really great, the different kinds of opportunities we provide. It's blended learning, we call it. Yeah.
That's really awesome. So mm-hmm. I like that you can have a little bit of the individual in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to go 2 days a week, because mm-hmm. I also think that you can learn from your peers in a
yeah.
group, in a small class, even in a large class, that you can all learn from each other. I think that there's great value in that. And so because this is through the public school education, mm-hmm. do you give these families a computer, a printer, paper, I mean, everything?
Internet, all of the above. Yes, we provide them computers. They can either get a laptop or a desktop. They get printer, paper. They get a stipend to pay for their internet usage.
Okay. Do they need, walk me through a day if I decided to do this. Do I have to log on and log off? Are you?
Yeah, so the students, they can complete it, and they have to be logged on in the 24-hour day. So they don't have to log on from 7 to 3 p.m. They can log on at night or in the middle of the night, whenever. But they have to be logged on at some point from Monday to Friday each day. To be considered in attendance for that day. And for my experience, I teach the cyber class, so the cyber side of it. So all my students are home. I don't really see them in person ever, but on webcam and in chat rooms I do. So my students would log on. They can log on Sunday night, Monday morning, and they're going to see their lessons for the entire week from Monday to Friday, all posted there, ready to go. So they can complete those lessons whenever they want. If they want to do Monday math and say, I'm going to do all my math classes today, they can sit there for 3 hours and do all their math classes right in a row and take their little quizzes or assessments, or they can go and say, I'm going to do math, social studies, English, just like a regular student would, and and switch it up whenever they want to do that. So I also offer one virtual class per week, which is optional. So they can come in. It's supplementary work. We preview, we review material. So the students can come in and see my face, but if they want to, they don't have to see me or talk to me at all if they don't want to. They can completely do it independently and individually, which promotes their time management and personal responsibility skills for the high school kids who I deal with. And so basically we take it week by week, and I have office hours every day where the students can come in for at least an hour in a chat room and ask me questions, and I encourage communication between me and the students and the parents. So it's really just very free for my students to come in and take a look at what's in store for them for the week and decide on their time when they're going to complete that and when they're going to finish.
So this starts in kindergarten and moves all the way through senior and high school.
Yes, we even have students that are 19 and 20 years old who are dropped out of school and now need credit recovery and are trying to graduate. We don't give a GED. We actually offer a diploma.
That's very noble.
Yeah.
So if I had my five-year-old daughter doing this, would a teacher check up with me once a week, or how does that work?
So with the elementary school, I have less experience with, but from what I've seen, the teacher is more of a tool for the parent to provide them the tools to teach their child in the world, like all day long. So you wouldn't have a five-year-old sitting in front of a computer all day learning social studies and English and math. It would be maybe a couple things on the computer, but the parent would be in contact with the teacher more to get the tools, and while they're out maybe shopping or while they're in the house, they do measurements, they can do prices, they can really learn at their own time.
And hands-on.
Yeah, the parent really does play a large role in teaching the younger children, the elementary school kids, you know, educating them themselves, and the teachers are really like a resource for them to support them and provide them with the materials.
Mm-hmm. Let's say that you have a child that you said can finish all five math lessons in a day. And do you have some students that are finishing and maybe they're ready to move on to the next year's math? Can they move forward at their own pace like that, or do you really try to keep them on grade level?
No, it's very customizable. So especially for elementary, if you have a fourth grader who reads at a fifth grade level and math at a sixth grade level, they'll be given those resources and to learn at that rate. In the high school, like I'm teaching geometry, it's really... The classes are more limited to the semester of the year, so it's a full year class. We have some half year classes where I do teach a half year geometry and a full year. So some of my kids getting credit recovery might just do the half year, and then they can take pre-calc the next half of the year or a different class the next half of the year.
Do you find that some of your high school students are taking classes that will also count towards college credits?
Yes, we do have advanced placement classes that take place in person and online as well. Actually, next year I'm going to take up teaching AP Calculus, which I'm really excited about. And, they get credits for...
That's great because it's really efficient use of our money when we can, because college is so expensive nowadays, when those credits can count towards college. Maybe they can go in as a second semester freshman.
And I have students graduating early. I have a 10th grader this year who's taking... She is taking so many classes. She chose to. She wants to be a doctor. I know this. She's taking two maths, two Englishes. She's going to graduate by the end of her 10th grade year, possibly mid-junior year. So she is... You know, it's up to the student how much they want to take on when they want to graduate. They could technically be there till 21. You know, we don't have to push them out the door at any time. So they can accelerate their learning. They can slow down their learning. It's very customizable for the student.
I like that because I think that some schools are very pigeonholed and it's one size fits all. So here at Your Family Matters, we're all about treating the individual or the individual family. One more question. So... I know that there's a certain amount of days that you have to be in school according to the state of Pennsylvania, but for these kids who can do their schoolwork during the snow day or you know, do they finish May 1st as long as they're logged in?
No, I guess like so for the week, if they do all their math classes, for example, on Monday, they still would have to log in at least for like a minute. They'd have to log in. If they're logged in for a minute, that's considered in attendance, I guess. So they still have to log in the rest of the days, even if they do all their work on the one day, because it would be considered, you know, truant or we'd have issues with the state. And
okay, so basically it's just they, you know, they have to do that so that they're not in trouble. But as long as you're identifying that they're learning what they need to be learning.
Yeah.
So what kind of students are you seeing?
I see students from such a wide demographic. I have students from the city whose local schools are very bad, like very, you know, not a healthy environment and want to go to Stuyver.
Or not safe, maybe.
Not safe.
Not safe for them.
Students who were homeschooled in elementary school who are now go to Cyber in middle school and high school and continue
and maybe they need that help because it's too high level and the moms and dads can't teach them pre-calculus or all of these things.
Yeah, that may be the case. They continue with their homeschooling clubs and activities that they used to do. I also have students. I have one student who was filming a show for the CW out west California. So I have students that, you know, are in all fields, all types of fields. And I find the most successful ones, my students that find the most success, have passions for things in life outside of school, who do school as a, you know, like as a something they need to get done, and they really have passion for mm-hmm. things that they love.
And so as a homeschool mom, and now this is a form of homeschooling,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Do you find that any of these children are socially inappropriate? I mean, like, you know, because that's what we hear all the time as a homeschool mom. Like, if I had a penny, Anthony, for every person that said that, you know, we would be multi-billionaires.
I do not find that. I have students that have been jaded from the public school system, from the brick and mortars, from the public high schools that have been bullied and made fun of and have difficulties now reaching out and communicating with me, even, you know, as a teacher, like, are hesitant to that. So to break those barriers, I find, are really difficult. I'll talk to a parent and say, you know, they might need help, but they don't reach out as much. So I'll try to contact them and reach out myself and encourage that communication. I've seen success with that, which is really encouraging.
And do you feel like you can give more one-on-one with these people because your caseload is smaller, perhaps?
It's not smaller, but it's more flexible. So I have a lot more time when I do one lesson and I record it and I post it. In a brick and mortar, I have most of my experiences in a public high school. I would do the same lesson 5 times in a day, and then after school be able to help them. Or maybe during my 1 hour break, I could help them. But now I record myself, I post it up, and I can use my whole day for feedback, for giving them constructive criticism, and for communicating with them and talking with them, checking in with them, and seeing how they're doing.
So if we were interested in this, we would go to paleadershipcharterschool.com.
The acronym is PALCS, PALCS. org.
Thank you, Anthony. Dave, you're in the hot seat. Dave Rossi, the CEO of Esperanza Charter. They have cyber schools as well as brick and mortar. When did you start these schools?
First of all, good morning, and thanks for having me as well. The Esperanza Academy Charter School was founded in 2000, August of 2000. We had our first school year in that school year, the 2000-2001 school year, opened up as a ninth grade, and then had our first graduating class in June 2004, and then we've been around ever since. The cyber school, Esperanza Cyber Charter School, we are in our third year of operation. Both schools founded by Esperanza.
Do you have waiting lists for the cyber and the charters?
The charter school we do, the brick-and-mortar Esperanza Academy, which is a high school. Actually, it's a 6 through 12 now. We've expanded. We have a full middle school as well. So we're 6 through 12 at Esperanza Academy, and that's how I'll distinguish. Esperanza Academy, Esperanza Cyber. Esperanza Academy is a 6 through 12. We have about, right now, about 1,410 kids in grades 6 through 12, and we have an extensive waiting list. Historically, our waiting list has been over 1,000 per year, and those are new applications per year. So it's been a school in demand. We're located in North Philadelphia, 5th and Hunting Park, and we have an extensive waiting list. As a cyber school, we do not have an enrollment cap. There's been, as far as Esperanza Academy, there's been a debate in Philadelphia over, is the school district of Philadelphia allowed to cap charter schools, cap their enrollment. We've agreed to a cap of around 1,435 students, so we're just below. And that was a mutually agreed upon number according to charter school law. A cyber school is authorized by the state. And that's different than a brick and mortar. A brick and mortar is authorized by a local school district, and the cyber school is statewide. There are no enrollment caps, and you can enroll students from all over the state. And that one, we do not have a waiting list. We have a rolling enrollment, and we accept any student who's interested.
And anyone can attend either one of these schools?
Yes, we do not screen. We do not cream. For example, if a student has an individual education plan or requires special education services, or if they are a student who speaks English as a second language, we do not screen those students out. As a matter of fact, we pride ourselves in accepting students with great needs, and we pride ourselves in moving those students ahead.
Awesome. How have your charter schools changed education locally and nationally, or charter schools in general?
I think we like to call it providing opportunity. And I think, first of all, from a school choice perspective, it's really crucial. It's really important that we provide more options to our parents, to our families, particularly in communities that have options that may not be positive options for kids, or there may be a system that's in distress, or there may be something that's just not working for kids. I believe, and Esperanza believes, that parents are the primary educators. And Esperanza, just for some background on them, Esperanza was founded by the Hispanic clergy and the Reverend Luis Cortez in Philadelphia back in the 80s. And out of that growth, it was an idea that could we form an organization that could do more than what the local church could do? Because I think the mission of the local church might be quite different than what a community-based organization would do. Everything from economic development to mortgage counseling to a welfare-to-work program to meet the needs specifically of folks in Hispanic North Philadelphia at the time. And out of that grew an organization, a community faith-based organization called Esperanza, which is at this point the largest Hispanic faith-based organization in the world. And that organization founded institutions. They founded Esperanza Academy Charter School, Esperanza Cyber School, and also Esperanza College, which is a branch campus of Eastern University. So the idea is you have this faith-based organization that is founding public institutions in the sense of our charter schools. The college is a Christian college. The charter schools, and the idea is to manage them to strengthen the community in which we serve, and therefore the mission of Esperanza based on Matthew 25:40, which is serving the least of these. And out of that was birthed the institutions of Esperanza Academy and Esperanza Charter School, based on the belief that parents are the primary educators. So we are behind school choice 100%.
So since August 2000, when you opened up your ninth grade and you had your first graduating class in June 2004, have we been able to informally track these kids and these families and see the success of the education that you're able to give to them?
We have. And we traditionally have served and still do the community right in the area that we serve. So Hispanic North Philadelphia, with poverty rates of about anywhere from 85% to 90% is what our students are traditionally. We have about 20% of our students who speak English as their primary language. We have students who require special education services at a clip larger than the city of Philadelphia at large, right around 18%. And what we've seen is a steady growth. We've seen graduation rates in the mid-90s, the mid-90%. We've seen dropout rates yearly less than 1% for the last 8 years running. We've seen test scores rising and beating the city overall. And one of the things we track also is value-added education. There's the idea of when you get a student, can you move them ahead more than a year's worth of education? And so the idea is the focus on, because as a dad, that's what I want to know. Whatever school experience my boys are in, I want to know as the primary educator, wherever I choose to have them do their studies, whether it's homeschooling, whether it's public school, whether it's Christian school, it doesn't matter. The idea is that experience moving them ahead and maximizing their potential and filling their gaps? And that's what all parents want. And we want an education that aligns with our values as parents. And I think that's the idea. And we've seen really good growth from how we move students ahead. In the past few years, we've been recognized as U.S. News and World Report as a silver medalist school and a bronze medalist school, respectively. It puts us in about the top 9% of schools nationwide in terms of our college readiness. And doing all of this by serving the students right in our community, not trying to bring in students who don't require services or who have this pristine educational background. We want to take students that need Esperanza Charter Schools, and we feel like we provided an opportunity and we filled a void in North Philadelphia.
And I want to get back to that, but you said that you're seeing a decreased dropout rate and an improved graduation rate. Are you also seeing an improved higher education? Are more of these children going on to college or even just some kind of training school so that they're able to get skills and use the education that you gave to them?
Yeah, our goal is to make sure every child is college ready by the time they leave us. That's been daunting. Historically, we've had a ninth grade. So by the time a student gets in ninth grade, studies show that you can't do a ton to change what's happened prior to that, but we ignore that. And we just said we got to move ahead. We have to maximize every student with where we get them. So now we start in the sixth grade. However, historically, all of the graduating classes we've had, they've had a ninth grade entrance into Esperanza Academy because our expansion just recently happened. We see over 97% of our kids accepted into two or four-year colleges on a yearly basis, and we've seen anywhere from 65 to 70% of those students actually go. We do see a gap with, you know, if you look at the 95 to 97% accepted and you see 65 to 70% going, there's still a gap. So there are some students that get accepted, even get scholarships, and for some reason they don't go. So our goal is not just to get them accepted, but then help them make sure they find their way to that college of their choice. So we've seen that. We've also seen college persistence at a high rate. Students who are in their first year of college going back to their second, we track that, and we also track how many of them graduate, and we're seeing high numbers overall of our students since June 2004 who have gone to college, graduated from college, and are now our productive citizens.
I bet graduation day is very exciting at your school because I can imagine that you might have a lot of children who they might be the first generation who is graduating from high school and going on to college, which is really exciting for you to play a role in. Are you also seeing an increased parental involvement over the years? Or I know that that's probably so difficult in North Philly where you might only have one parent in the house. Sometimes you may not have either parent in the house. It might be grandparents or aunts and uncles. But are you seeing that parents are trying to get involved, understanding that education is, if it's important to the parent, it'll be important to the child?
Yeah, we have seen a growing involvement, and I think it's the responsibility of the school, of every school, to foster involvement. I believe one of the things our schools are very good at, not our schools being Esperanza, but schools nationwide, is shutting the parent out. And what happens is when you get shut out, you stop engaging because you feel like no matter what I say, no matter what I do, the school's going to do what it's going to do, and I just have to manage that, and I'm going to manage my own child. So the approach we've taken is to believe that every parent is a great parent, validate them, and truly see them as the primary educator and the partner. If you truly partner with someone, mm-hmm. they'll engage you at a different rate. And I think that's one of the areas that public education has gone awry, is that they believe if it's an area of high poverty, oh, there must be family problems, therefore I'm not even going to engage the family. I'm going to do what I do with the student, and who cares about that? We want to maximize that relationship and engage. And we may not always agree, but if the process is good, and if folks are respected, and if we go to them and say, hey, we need your perspective on educating your child because you know your child better than we do, that validation, that respect, that dignity, regardless of demographics, of poverty level, that speaks to every human being. And I think by nature, you will see increased involvement if you engage people in that manner. And that's what we try to do at Esperanza Charter Schools.
I want to talk a little bit about your schools and how they have been honored. I know that you had people like Hillary Clinton come and walk through your school and spend some time with you. Can you share about some of those people, governors, mayors, other presidents who have walked through Esperanza? Because they are acknowledging that you're setting the standard high, and we should be doing that at every school across the United States.
Yeah, and that's one of the benefits of being an Esperanza-founded school. Esperanza as a community-based organization and having a national profile in terms of strengthening the Hispanic community, specifically what we've been able to do is work with, on the Esperanza side, not the school side, work with government from an advocacy standpoint and also be able to highlight the programs in which we have. So, for example, through those relationships and the success that the school has seen, it has attracted folks like Hillary Clinton, John McCain, We've had others there who are in government. We've governors speaking at graduation, mayors, and we even had the opportunity through a partnership with the Humane Society with Esperanza to have Michael Vick speak at our charter school, which was his first public appearance in Philadelphia. And out of that came animal awareness clubs at the school, and it was an interesting thing to use that for good. And bringing all this to our students has been a great thing, and I think that's what community-based education is we have a community-based partner in Esperanza that founded us that really helps bring these things to us, and if you can get good results as a school, then I think people are going to be attracted to true community-based schooling that gets results.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you saying we had Hillary Clinton, we had John McCain. You know, regardless if we are a progressive, a liberal, a conservative, a Democrat, a Republican, we all like to label ourselves. But we are all working to better the future of America. And we all understand that that starts with our children. They're our future leaders. So it's encouraging to me that you have everyone's representative represented who is coming to your school. They want to see what you are doing. And so that just encourages that I think that we can all work together. We have a common enemy, which we are fighting against, and that is poverty, and that is those people who are uneducated. That's our common enemy. So sometimes when we have a common enemy, we are able to look past all of our little differences so that we're able to work for the common good. So that's just really encouraging that you have so many people that are noticing that Esperanza and charter schools are doing a good job here in North Philly, right here in Philadelphia.
And Carla, one thing I forgot to mention there is one of the ways that Esperanza does this, we have Esperanza is the host of the National Hispanic Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And hitting back to your point of being nonpartisan and just working for the good of the community in which we serve. When President Bush was president, he came to all of the Hispanic prayer breakfasts that we hosted, and also President Obama as well has been there, and we have leadership from across the aisle in government that come and engage with Esperanza in this way, and I think that's been exciting to see that happen.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Let's talk a little bit about funding for your schools. Where does our funding come from? For Esperanza, does it come from private donors? Is this a nonprofit, or is it also coming from tax money?
We receive there's a funding system in Pennsylvania that all charter schools operate under, and that funding system I think has some flaws, and I think what it does is it does pit charter against public school district unintentionally. However, I would say about 90% of the funding, 90 to 95% of the funding that Esperanza Cyber Charter School and Esperanza Academy gets is from the public school system as far as from the state and local municipalities. And then there are federal funds that we're also eligible for, title funding, IDEA funding as well, that come from the federal government as well, which is probably about 10% of the money we see. So we're funded like a traditional, similar to a traditional district school.
And then with lunches, I guess they have, you're giving them lunches and maybe even pre-school meals and maybe even after-school meals?
At Esperanza Academy, we have a free and reduced lunch program. To my knowledge, a cyber school is not eligible for free and reduced lunches, which I think is interesting. So there's been a decision made at the state level that a student attending a cyber school who may have the same poverty classification as a student in a brick-and-mortar charter school or public district school is not eligible for that, based on the fact that cyber schooling is designed to be at home, although they can come voluntarily to a learning center such as Anthony's described and Esperanza Cyber has as well in Philadelphia.
Yeah, at a Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School, as far as I'm aware, our funding comes from the home districts from where the students enroll at. Now, at a cyber school, they get 70% of what the district would spend on the student. So we get 70% of that, and the rationale for that is that the student is still able to participate in sports and clubs at their local district, at their local high school. That might be down the street. So that's where they kind of rationalize that 30% sticks with the home district, and they can use that for extracurriculars, essentially.
And you're bringing up a valid point, the extracurricular, the sports, maybe the drama clubs that the children wish to be involved with. So that's the cyber school, but at the charter school, do you have clubs there? Do you have drama programs? You do. Okay.
Yeah, we do. We are a comprehensive school program at the high school level, actually at the middle school level too, but specifically at the high school, we offer majors. We have engineering, health science, journalism, technology, the arts, and what we try to do is we try to get students in, and those are both during the school day and also after school programs that highlight those things to provide for students.
And if there was a homeschool student that wanted to tap into your drama club or your after-school tennis program, I don't know if you have tennis or not, but your after-school athletic program, would they be able to do that?
Yeah, they would be. For an after-school club, we could accept a homeschool student both at the cyber school or Esperanza Academy. And there are some rules in terms of if it's a PIAA sport, that student would have to actually go to their home neighborhood school. The charter school really couldn't, use that as a recruiting tool for that. But in terms of if it's a non-PIAA activity, which most activities are, then you could have homeschoolers involved, and there's no stopping that from happening.
Would you ever be interested in, as a charter school, brick and mortar school, also providing what Anthony's Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School is providing, which is you allow people to come 2 days a week to be in a class, but then they get the cyber school. Just again, adding more choice to the family.
Yeah, I think
is that down the road, do you think, in the future?
Yeah, I think there's an openness to that. I think especially on the cyber end, we look at that as it's a newer program for us, 3 years old, and we look at that and we're looking for creative ways also to partner with communities and to partner with parents in order to provide an education for their kids. So I think we'd be very open to partnerships, providing a portion of the education, to all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, yeah, what I hypothesize may happen in the next 5 or 10 years, I foresee even public high schools starting to offer cyber classes. Like, if a student needs to take 2 maths and doesn't have time in a regular school day, they could take 1 class at home, 2 classes at home. I already know of high schools in New Jersey that offer these cyber classes to their students. So I believe that might be a trend in where this the state might be going in terms of flexibility and giving students choices to their education.
And I really love this because for those communities that are on an economic downside, I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that perhaps we don't have a lot of 15, 16, 17-year-olds graduating from our lower-income neighborhoods because they need to get a job. They need money. They need to support themselves. So I think that you are providing a way that they can do all of their math on Monday or all of their classes on Wednesday and just log in from McDonald's or from wherever their job is, mowing the lawn. But this really, you're able to incorporate working, which is what's most important to a lot of 15 and 16-year-olds who don't have mothers and fathers. And also getting that good education, because we do know that if they're able to go to college, they will be getting an annual salary that is way more and able to support themselves and future generations and future families than if they don't get that GED.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think technology is a game changer. It has torn down walls. It has connected. You look at social media, whatever, it's a connector. It can be used for negative reasons. It can also be used for positive, and it's a connector. I think it's an opportunity to break up the structured system of education that sometimes doesn't work for every kid, and it can provide an opportunity, and I think Anthony's right. I think what we're going to see in education in the next 5 to 10 years is, do I want to take this course in a blended fashion, full virtual fashion, a traditional in the classroom fashion? Am I going to take it at this time or that time? Am I going to take it in real time, or am I going to do something that is something that is self-directed, where I'm not in real time with someone? In the cyber world, we call it asynchronous versus synchronous. You know, it's happening simultaneously. You're with the teacher, whether it's through a webcam or whether you're on your own working. I think what we're getting to the point is, what does every student need? And it can be a combination of what they're getting brick and mortar traditional with what they're getting from a virtual experience, and fitting that into the schedule of what's best for that individual student, because I believe that all kids are wired differently, created differently, and I think their educational experience needs to mirror that. And I think that's what I'm excited about when I see school choice in Pennsylvania, cyber options, virtual options to the brick and mortar options. I think it has done nothing but enhance education in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. We say our school's not for cookie-cutter students, because we're not a cookie-cutter school. And we have 2,500 kids for 2,500 different reasons. And after the first marking period just ended, I got to do parent-teacher conferences with a lot of my students' parents, and just to talk to the parents and hear why they're there was really, really great for me as a teacher, to hear the reasons my students are here.
And you both talked about, you have some students who are able to excel and move quickly through. And you talked about the little girl who has pre-med on her mind, even as a sophomore.
Yeah.
But I think that this is also good for the child that maybe needs a little extra time to go through each lesson, or the child that needs to go over it a couple of days. Instead of them doing three lessons in a day, they might need to do one lesson in 3 days. But it doesn't discourage that student, because they're working against themselves, not comparing themselves to a class of 25 kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in all of my lessons, I provide lots of choice and opportunities. I provide 3 different sets of homework problems. I say, if you feel like you have a basic understanding, a decent understanding, or an advanced understanding, they can choose which problems to go through. I can provide lots of extra stuff for them to do that is almost essentially optional, because I can't physically make them do it, but it gives a student who wants to learn, who is struggling, but will put in that extra half hour, that extra hour, where it gives them the resources they need, whereas another student might say, oh, no, I watched the lesson, I got it, I'm going to go straight to the quiz. But another kid might take those extra steps that are there for them. So it really does provide choice for the student as well as me as a teacher being able to provide options for them.
So if we could wrap up today on school choice, this is Your Family Matters with Carla Dedesi, and just talking about loving options and just being aware of, as a parent, as the guardian of a child, that yes, you can send your child to a traditional school where they'll sit for 6 or 7 hours a day with one or multiple teachers and the same children, or you can customize and really plan something specific to your child. So thank you, Anthony Mahone, for being with us today from Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School. And can you give us your website one more time, please?
Sure. It's palcs.org, PALCS.
And are we able to pull our child out of traditional school and start up with you in the middle of the year?
Yes, at any time, rolling admissions, just like Esperanza Cyber. And the last note I want to say is that for parents that are really on the line about pulling their kids out and going to cyber school or a different form, the cyber school, I find, really gives back to the family time for the kids. Instead of getting on the bus in the morning and coming back at night and having to do homework all night, they're home, they're working with the parents, they just have the opportunities to do what they want and be with their family more, and it just gives... Yeah,
it gives more family support and perhaps more of a nurturing environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's tons of research out there that proves that when our children have decreased anxiety, they have an increased learning ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sometimes a home can afford that and offer that to our children. And Dave, thank you for being with us from Esperanza Charter Schools and Cyber Schools. And if there's anything that you would like to leave us with, then...
And similar to Anthony's school, we're a virtual school that is statewide. So for more information on Esperanza Cyber Charter School, Esperanza, which is the Spanish word for hope, EsperanzaCyber.org. And you can find more information about that. Similar to what Anthony said, we are rolling admissions. You can enroll at any point in the school year, and we'd be happy to increase and to serve more families and more students as we continue in education at Esperanza.
Thank you. This is Carla Dedesi with Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. As we're thinking about Christmas, when we were given the greatest gift ever, Christ, salvation, this is a book that I read to my children every Christmas season. It's from 1915, and it's called A Child's Life of Christ. And I think that it's really important that we still remind our children and our families of the real reason for Christmas. So let's begin our story in a very far away country. Very far away from our own country lies the land where Jesus Christ was born. More than 5,000 miles stretch between us here in the United States and it, Palestine. It rests in the very heart and center of the old world, encircled by Asia, Europe, and Africa. A little land, it is only about 200 miles in length and but 50 miles broad, but its hills and valleys, its dusty roads and green pastures, its vineyards and olive yards, and its village streets have been trodden by the feet of our Lord. And for us, as well as for the Jews, to whom God gave it, it is the Holy Land. More than 1900 years ago, there lived in the quiet town of Nazareth a pious Jewish maiden. Her name was Mary. She was going to be married to a poor man named Joseph, who was a carpenter by trade. Though living thus in humble life, they were of the royal family of Judah and were the descendants of King David. The Jews were very particular to keep exact lists of the names of their families, genealogies, they called them. And these lists went back for many hundred years. Though Joseph and Mary belonged to the royal family of David, yet they lived in Nazareth of Galilee, far away from King David's city, Bethlehem. The royal emperor Augustus had conquered Palestine and put a king of his own choosing on the throne of Judah. His name was Herod the Great. Great indeed in nothing good. Great only in wickedness. This Herod was king under Augustus, and he was obliged to rule as the emperor ordered. We now go back to Nazareth and see Mary, who is sitting alone in her own house. A glorious visitor stands before her and says, "Peace be with you, Mary. Be glad, for the Lord is with you and has blessed you more than any other woman." Mary saw that her bright visitor was an angel of God, and she felt troubled at his saying. What did it mean? Why was he sent to her? She asked herself. Then the angel told her not to fear, for he came to tell her that God would send her a baby, a wonderful baby. It would be no other than Jesus, the long-promised Savior of the world. Oh, how long the world had waited for this son of the woman, which was to undo the mischief caused by Satan, according to the promise made thousands of years ago to Adam and Eve. And how often from that time had the prophets foretold his coming, how a virgin should have a son who would be Christ the Lord. Mary had heard all these wonderful and true sayings of God, and she was glad to find that, of all the women of Israel, she was the one chosen to be the mother of this child. But the old prophets said that this child was to be born at Bethlehem, whereas Mary lived at Nazareth. This old saying, however, came exactly true in a strange way. The Emperor Augustus who was the master of the land of Palestine, said that he wanted a list of the names of every man and woman, their ages, their rank, and their trades throughout the land. This list was called a census and was taken every 10 years. Herod was to make out the list, and he said to prevent mistakes, he must take the people according to the tribe to which they belonged. Everyone was therefore obliged to go to the city to which his tribe of family belonged. However troublesome or however far it might be for some of them, they could not help it. The will of Augustus was law and had to be obeyed. Yes, into every city, into every town, into every village, there came a messenger to say, everyone must go to his right place to have his name put down in the list for the emperor. Now Joseph and Mary belonged to the family of David, of the tribe of Judah, so they had to go to Bethlehem, for that was David's city, to have their names written down. It was about 60 miles from Nazareth to Bethlehem, a very long journey in those days. How tired they are and how glad to see the white walls of the little city through the olive trees and vines which grew around it. It is evening and the city is full, for others like them have come from a distance to be registered. They go to the inn, but there is no place for them. Where shall they sleep for the night? The master of the inn pities them, for Mary looks so tired and pregnant, and he says they may rest in the stable for the night. How glad Joseph and Mary are even of that lowly place. There is straw for them to lie upon and a roof over their heads, but that is all. The oxen and the asses are around them, and many are going and coming, but they are thankful after their long and weary journey to find any shelter in Bethlehem. That night, the old saying of Micah, chapter 2, the prophet came true. For there at Bethlehem did God send to Mary the promised baby. Yes, that night was the most wonderful and most joyous in the world's history. For then was born the Son of God. Mary took her baby and dressed him in some long clothes called swaddling clothes, and they laid him in a manger. She had no soft cradle near. She dared not lay him on the ground, lest the beasts should tread on him. So she put him into one of the troughs from which the cattle ate their food. On the night that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, some shepherds were watching their flocks in the fields around the city. More than 1,000 years before, had David, when a lad, kept his father's sheep in the very same place. Now these shepherds were guarding their flocks from the wolves and foxes, which still lived in the hills and woods of Palestine. Most likely these shepherds were good men who were waiting for the coming of the Savior, like many other pious men of Israel. According to the writings of their prophets, they knew that the time of his birth must be near at hand. But now the time has come. Only as yet they knew it not. All at once they see a strange bright light. It is night, so it is not the sun, nor is it the moon, nor the stars. Brighter than the brightest day is this light from heaven. The glory of the Lord shines round about them. No wonder they were afraid. Then an angel spoke to them and said in kindest tones, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. He is a newborn baby lying in a manger at the inn of Bethlehem. Go and you will find him. This is Carla Dedessi from Your Family Matters. Did you know that I have authored 2 books for my family, but also for yours? Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely and Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely. Both are available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and as ebooks. Follow my books on Facebook and Twitter for my latest promotions and news. Thanks for listening.